Today in Europe. Once again, the Columbia Broadcasting System brings you the latest news of the day in Europe, where the Moscow radio has just broadcast a communique announcing that the American freighter City of Flint has been released and ordered to leave Murmansk immediately. The Soviet communique did not make clear the circumstances of the release. Diplomatic circles believe the American freighter was being turned over to the German crew. First tonight, we turn to Columbia's continental representative, William L. Shira, who brings you the news from the German capital. Go ahead, Berlin.
Good evening, this is William L. Shira in Berlin. As might have been expected, the Soviet note to Great Britain protesting against the British blockade is the big story in Berlin tonight. The Berlin papers play it for all it's worth, with double column banner lines screaming across the front pages. Bolshevik Russia, which only a few months ago had such harsh words for Nazi Germany, could not have worded its note any better if its only desire had been to please Nazi ears. The entire text was splashed on the front pages of the Berlin press this afternoon. In fact, Russia halved all the front news we have in Berlin today. Besides its pleasing note to London, which Germany approved so warmly, there was a second story about a Soviet-Russian trade delegation arriving in the German capital today. It was led by People's Commissar Tavuzin, and one of its leading members was an artillery general from the Red Army, General Shevchenko. According to the German press, this Soviet delegation is not going to do any actual buying. It will merely look around Germany's factories and inform itself as to what the possibilities are. Sometime, of course, the Russians will have to take a lot of these German machines and chemicals as payment for all the foodstuffs and raw materials they apparently are hastily shipping to Germany to help the West fight the British blockade. The German press makes a great play of that million tons of grain fodder, which the Soviets are to deliver to Germany within the next 2 months. According to official statements here, that one shipment will guarantee the life of Germany's livestock for another year, as a million tons of fodder just about covers Germany's annual imports. So you might say that Red Russia is certainly the darling of Nazi Germany tonight. The loss of a German naval patrol boat, which hit a mine off the coast of Denmark last Saturday and cost the lives of 50 out of the crew of 55, was made public for the first time in Germany today. It's the first time since the war began that the German Navy has made public the loss of a ship. Submarine losses are never published. In the city of Bratislava this morning, the first president of Europe's newest state was elected and inaugurated. He was Father Joseph Tiso of the state of Slovakia. Slovakia, though nominally independent, is, as you know, under the military protection of Germany. But today, it forgot the war and celebrated the election of its first president, who yesterday received a high decoration from Harry Hitler. Robert Best, one of our veteran American foreign correspondents, was in Bratislava today to cover the election, and we're going to try to get through to him now to hear what it looked like. Come in, Mr. Best. Come in, Bratislava.
My friends, here in Bratislava, the capital city of Europe's newest state and the world's youngest republic, there blossomed today a national tree, the seed of which was planted in our own United States approximately 21 years and 5 months ago. The tree in question is the state of Slovakia. The seed from which this state has sprung is the history-making pact concluded between a group of prominent Czechs and Slovaks in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, on May 30th, 1918. The blossoms which appeared today on this tree converted it from a state without definite form into a constitutional republic headed by an authoritarian president. What fruit this tree will ultimately bear is a matter for the future. At the moment, in the opinion of many observers, it promises well. Slovakia's first president is a Catholic priest, Dr. Joseph Tiso, the son of extremely poor parents. to the presidency, he was raised at 11 o'clock this morning in a short but impressive ceremony in the main auditorium of Bratislava University, the home of Slovakia's parliament, until a normal building can be constructed. Here, in a session attended by the local diplomatic corps and several hundred of Slovakia's most distinguished citizens, as well as a number of foreign guests, Parliament elected Father Tiso President of the Republic by a unanimous vote and inducted him into office within less than 1 hour. And even this short hour included a recess to permit the Speaker of Parliament to go to a nearby building, inform Tiso of his election, and escort him to the enthusiastic assemblage. Tiso took the oath of office as president in priestly attire before a golden crucifix flanked by burning candles. The atmosphere was one of almost religious intensity. At intervals during the ceremony, tears filled the eyes of several members of the audience, this being especially the case with Tiso's father and mother, both of whom were privileged to be present and witness their son's elevation to that of the state's first citizen. From the university, Tiso drove to the newly adapted presidential palace in a coach drawn by 4 white horses, through beflagged streets lined by a cheering and flag-waving populace attired to a large extent in a richly embroidered and highly picturesque Slovak national costume. Before his coach marched an infantry company of the Guard Regiment, and behind him a squadron of cavalry. After receiving deputations of various groups who came to the presidential palace with felicitations, Tiso, as his first informal presidential declaration, asked me to extend cordial greetings from him to my audience, and more particularly to the American Slovaks, and to assure them in his name that he is determined to continue to do his utmost to lead Slovakia to a happy future, and to express in advance his thanks for every act of everybody who contributes toward closer relations between Slovakia and all other states. When planting the seed of the present Slovak state in Pittsburgh during the last year of the World War, many who had a hand in this work visualized a growth different from that into which Slovakia has developed. Most of those who were party to this treaty, in fact, hoped and expected that it would thrive as a sort of twin tree, so to speak, together with the Czech nation in a state of Czechs and Slovaks. Tiso himself, believably, tried for years to nurse the young tree in this direction. Last winter and springtime, the storms of fate severed the twins, however, and led Tiso to the decision that the Slovak nation must be turned again toward her historical position 1,000 years ago, namely toward an independent state. Through a series of highly important developments, that decision led straight to today's ceremonies and to Slovakia's position in the Society of Nations. I wish you all a good night. We are now after midnight in Bratislava. Goodbye.
That was Robert Bass speaking to you from Bratislava, Slovakia. We're back in Berlin now, and I return you to Columbia in New York.
You have heard from William L. Shira and Robert Best of the United Press giving his account of today's activities in Bratislava, capital of Slovakia. And now for news from Edward R. Murrow in the British capital, we take you to London.
This is London. Mr. Chamberlain gave his weekly review of the war today. He dismissed operations on the Western Front as being of very little importance. He said that Britain's merchant ship losses totaled 22,715 tons. Germany has lost 28,367 tons, a net gain for Britain of nearly 6,000 tons. The Prime Minister answered Herr von Ribbentrop's speech. There was a denial that Britain had plotted for war. The documents had been published. The world could judge, said Mr. Chamberlain. Now, it's of course true that some of the documents have been published, but not all. We have not yet had a blue book on the British-Russian negotiations, nor do we know exactly what happened in the exchanges between Britain and Poland preceding the outbreak of war. Some time will probably pass before those chapters are published. London has made no official reply to the Soviet note refusing to recognize the British contraband list. But it is pointed out here that both the list and procedure are similar to those issued by the Russian government at the outbreak of the last war. That may not prove to be a very strong argument with the present Russian government. Tonight, the House of Commons has been talking about India. Mr. Wedgwood Benn led off for the Labour Party. He posed Mr. Gandhi's two questions. What are your war aims? And if they are to secure freedom, then are we to share in that freedom?
Mr. Benn did not believe that India should be asked to wait indefinitely, but he agreed that immediate legislation was impracticable. He wanted India to have a more direct responsibility for the conduct of the war and the peace. Sir Samuel Hoare, replying for the government, pointed out that many divisions exist within India. Britain, he said, had responsibilities to the minorities. The Home Secretary saw no reason why the Viceroy should not place certain Indian political leaders at the head of important departments. Sir Samuel spoke of the possibility of non-cooperation in India. The King Emperor's government must be carried on, and it would be carried on with efficiency, strength, and justice, he said. The answer to those Indians who advocate non-cooperation was in that last sentence. Lord Halifax, speaking in the House of Lords, did not defend Russia's action in invading Poland, but he pointed out that Germany was the first to violate Polish territory, and that the new Russian boundary was practically the old Curzon line. The Foreign Secretary hoped that good relations between Russia and Turkey would continue, and he said that the government was considering more trade agreements with Russia. Voluntary enlistment has now been opened in this country for the cavalry, Royal Armored Corps, the artillery, engineers, and infantry. The age limit is 22 to 35. The Tailors and Garment Workers Union have been offered an increase in wages. If the employer's offer is accepted, the men will receive about $1.20 more per week. Women will get only 60 cents additional. The Air Ministry announced tonight that 7 out of the 12 German bombers employed in last Saturday's attack on a British convoy in the North Sea failed to return to their base. There is no late news from Bill Henry, Columbia's war correspondent, but there are reports that British troops took time off from their digging today in order to engage in snowball fights. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
You have been listening to another of Columbia's special broadcasts on the European War, direct from Berlin, Bratislava, Slovakia, and London. William L. Shira, Columbia's Continental Chief, reported from the German capital, Robert Brest from Bratislava, and Edward R. Murrow from London. Tomorrow night at this time, you will hear from Eric Severide, who will discuss his 10-day trip through the neutral countries of Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg. At 8:55 Eastern Time tonight, Columbia presents the nightly broadcast of Elmer Davis and the News. At 11 o'clock this evening, CBS will broadcast an address by the President of the United States. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.